The big economic story today is straightforward to state but requires context to interpret. U.S. inflation fell to 3.5% in June, beating forecasts. The Federal Reserve's target is 2%, so we're not at the destination yet, but the direction is clearly right. What matters analytically is why it's falling. If it's falling because supply chains have fully normalized and the tariff-driven price shocks of 2025 have worked through the system, that's sustainable disinflation. If it's falling because consumer demand is softening as households exhaust savings, that's a more worrying signal about the underlying economy. The June CPI report will give us component-level data that can help distinguish between those scenarios.
S&P futures this morning are sitting around 7,601, essentially flat, up about 0.4%, which tells you markets are processing the inflation news as roughly priced in. The big market story today is earnings, not macro data. The major banks have reported, and they've crushed estimates. Trading desks and deal-making, mergers, acquisitions, capital raises have been the engines. That combination makes sense. A volatile geopolitical environment in the Gulf drives commodity trading revenues, while a recovering deal market after years of M&A suppression during the high-rate environment means investment banking fees are flowing again.
The Paramount-Warner Bros. Discovery merger being sued by 12 states is one of those legal stories that will define the entertainment industry's structure for the next decade. California Attorney General Rob Bonta is leading a coalition arguing that the $110 billion deal would, in his words, extinguish competition in Hollywood. Now, this is a good moment to step back and explain what extinguish competition means legally, because there's often confusion about what antitrust law actually requires. This is a good point to walk through some basics, because the merger case really hinges on what courts understand a monopoly to mean. The foundation of U.S. antitrust law is the Sherman Act, passed in 1890. Section 1 prohibits contracts and conspiracies in restraint of trade. Section 2 prohibits monopolization. But here's the crucial legal nuance. Having a large market share doesn't make you a monopolist under the law. The statute requires monopoly power, the ability to control prices or exclude competition in a defined market, plus the willful acquisition or maintenance of that power through anti-competitive conduct, as opposed to superior products or historical accident. The classic analogy is, imagine a town with one shoe store. The owner isn't a monopolist just because they're the only seller. They become a monopolist in the legal sense if they've actively prevented competitors from entering, signing exclusive leases on all available retail space, for instance. For Paramount and Warner Bros.'s Discovery, the states need to define the relevant market precisely. Is it streaming, theatrical distribution, content production? And they need to show that the combined entity could control prices or exclude rivals in that market, not just that it would be very large.
That legal framework is exactly why these state lawsuits face an uphill battle, even when the mergers seem large. Courts have historically been reluctant to block mergers based on size alone. The states will need to show specific competitive harm in specific defined markets. And streaming is a global market with Netflix, Amazon, Disney, Apple, and international competitors all competing. Defining that as a market where a Paramount-WBD merger creates a monopoly is genuinely difficult legally.
Trump-backed Freedom fuel stations raising prices above their debut $3.47 level after just weeks of operation is a story about the gap between political promises and market reality. Gas prices are set by global commodity markets, distribution costs, and local taxes, not by the branding preferences of the operator. A $3.47 price point in the current market was always going to be unsustainable without ongoing subsidy, and if prices are already climbing at these 25 Pennsylvania and New Jersey stations, the question of who owns them and what the economic model actually is becomes very relevant. The opaque ownership description in reporting suggests that answering that question may not be straightforward.
The housing bill becoming law without Trump's signature, meaning it became law through the constitutional provision that allows bills to pass if the president neither signs nor vetoes them within 10 days while Congress is in session, is a significant policy development that got less attention than it deserves. A sweeping housing bill represents rare legislative action on what is genuinely one of the most acute domestic economic crises. Home affordability has deteriorated dramatically since 2020, with median home prices in many markets more than doubling and mortgage rates at multi-year highs. The details of what's in the bill will shape how much relief it actually provides.
The nearly 1 million student loan borrowers leaving the SAVE repayment plan creates a cascading policy problem. SAVE, the Saving on a Valuable Education plan, was the Biden administration's income-driven repayment framework. With it being phased out, about 20% of departing borrowers moved into older IDR plans that are also scheduled for elimination by 2028. That sets up a second wave of forced transitions for borrowers who thought they'd found stable footing. For the federal student loan servicing system, which has already struggled with the transition logistics after the pandemic pause ended, managing multiple cohorts of borrowers in regulatory limbo is operationally challenging.